Hello, and welcome to what I believe will be one of the most fascinating NABBW teleseminars I've ever hosted. In a moment, I will introduce our guest, Carol Orsburn, who will be discussing her 21st book, Fierce with Age, Chasing Squirrels, Chasing God and Squirrels in Brooklyn. But first, let me introduce myself and set the stage. For those of you who do not know me, I'm Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com. And we have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com and a pretty active Facebook page that's at facebook.com/nabbw. Our websites are the number one sites found on the major search engines when you search for the keyword baby boomer women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, you're welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front NABBW site, which you can use to join. This call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We actually have recordings of roughly 100 past teleseminars, which are yours to listen to and enjoy at your convenience once you become a member of NABBW. Now, let me say a little bit about the format for the call today. First thing I would tell you is get yourself comfortable and make sure that in addition to having something to drink, you have paper and pencil to take notes. Two reasons that I say that. First, Carol will be sharing some amazing information here tonight. And second, she has a special gift for our listeners, which we'll discuss later. But I know you want to take down the details on how to access it. Now, for the next 30 minutes or so, I'll have the phone lines muted and Carol and I will be talking. After that, I will open the lines for questions from the audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, you know, for example, if something that Carol says makes you say, oh, I got to ask her that, you don't have to wait till the end. Just use the box on your computer screen to type in your questions. I'll see them as they come in, and then I'll relay them to Carol at the appropriate time. Now, before we get started on our book discussion, let me introduce Dr. Carol Orsburn. Carol Orsburn, Ph.D., is author of 21 books and founder of FierceWithAge.com, the digest of boomer wisdom, inspiration, and spirituality. She's an internationally known thought leader specializing in issues related to boomer women, spirituality, adult development, and quality of life. With a doctorate in the history and critical... Oh, I think I've got a word there. What is it? History and critical what of religion? Carol, is it...
History and critical theory of religion.
Theory, okay. Dr. Orsburn is sought after as a speaker and retreat leader on resilience, aging, and marketing to boomers. She's been a leading voice for her generation of women since she founded her first life stage initiative, Overachievers Anonymous, in the late 1980s. This organization is credited as a progenitor of both the simplicity and work-life balance movements. Carol has spent her life chronicling the challenges faced and overcome by women of her generation. In the process, she's written or co-authored 21 books, that's an amazing number in my mind, including The Art of Resilience, 100 Paths to Wisdom and Strength in an Uncertain World, published by Random House, and Nothing Left Unsaid, Words of Strength and Wisdom to Help You and Your Loved Ones Through the Hardest Times, by Canary. She served as co-founder of Fleshman Hillard F.H. Boom, which was the first global initiative by a top 10 public relations firm dedicated to helping brands connect with the boomer generation. Carol is also co-author of Vibrant Nation, What Women 50-Plus Know, Think, Do, and Buy, and Boom, Marketing to the Ultimate Power Consumer, the Baby Boomer Woman, which is considered by many to be the first groundbreaking book on the subject of baby boomer women as consumers. Carol also served in the formative role of senior strategist for VibrantNation.com. She has appeared multiple times on the Today Show and on Oprah, NBC Nightly News, and on the pages of the New York Times, USA Today, People Magazine, and the Wall Street Journal. Teaching ethics and resilience, Carol has served on the faculties of Georgetown University, Vanderbilt University's Leadership Development Center of the Owen Graduate School of Management, Loyola Marymount University, and the doctoral program on organizational leadership at Pepperdine University's Graduate School of Educational Psychology. An avid blogger, Carol's blog and op-ed credits include PBS's Next Avenue, Huffington Post, HumanasRealForMe.com, and VibrantNation.com, although her primary blog is her own, which you can find at FierceWithAge.com. Please help me welcome Dr. Carol Orsburn. Carol, before I launch into my questions, why don't I give you a brief opportunity to tell our audience a bit about what was going on in your life during the time you kept the diary that forms the backbone of your book, Fierce with Age. I've read it, and as I see it, the catalyst for all that transpired during this year was an opportunity that caused you to move out of your beloved Canyon home in Los Angeles and move to New York. But there's a lot more to it, and you could tell it a lot better than I can.
Well, listening to Io there, I have to laugh because, as you know, the book begins with, you know, I used to be Carol Orsborne and now I'm not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There is a sense, I think, that can get to in your life, even regardless of, you know, how many credentials you have, where you don't identify with them anymore. Somehow, you've just been let go of your last job, or you've been downsized, or you decided to retire. You know, for a reason, you're shaken out of your sense of who you are in the world. And to me, that is the delineation, the line between midlife and older age.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with so many baby boomers, thinking that midlife is going to go on forever, I'm one of the leading edge baby boomers. I'm 65, and when I went through this experience, I was 63. And what was, my husband got a job offer he couldn't refuse in New York. And so I left my community and followed there. And we ended up in a very young community. We were in a part of Brooklyn that is mostly populated by 20-year-olds, I think. It just happened that way. And so being cut off my own network and being amongst all these young people, and then also trying to reestablish myself in New York. As you say, I've had a pretty big career as a writer. And I just assumed that I could just sort of pick up where I left off with all my editors and
right.
publicists and everything. I hadn't realized that we'd all grown older. So many had been downsized or marginalized or were so busy they just didn't have time for me. For whatever reason, I had, I guess, an age-related identity crisis.
Okay. That's a good way to explain it. So,
it took a couple hundred pages to work it out. I during this period, obviously, I was cut off from my normal networks, and so I was journaling about growing older and aging, just myself from victim to witness of this process.
Mm-hmm.
And as the year went on, I was very fortunate to encounter a whole bunch of authors and have life experiences and some divine encounters that really moved me from a place of dreading age to embracing age. And that's really what the book is about.
And I think that's something that is a story you need to tell us, because I think that an awful lot of us are clinging to the fact of I'm still young, even though my 33-year-old son has been telling me since he was about 14 that I was old. I keep telling him I'm not. But despite all of that, I think we need to hear that crossing that great divide is something that we can do and triumph at the coming out on the other side. So I think that your book is an excellent trailblazing story of how what you went through, and you certainly don't pull any punches. You let us know all the stresses that, I mean, the part where you weren't able to pray anymore, that was just such a shock to me, because it seems to me that a person who has prayer in their life, that it's always going to be there for them. So you certainly, in my opinion, reading the book, you certainly were kind of lost in the wilderness and you found your way out, and we all need to hear that story. So I know that we have a lot to cover here in our time, so I think what I should do is quit my chat here and ask you my first question, which would be, talk a little bit, if you would please, about the phrase fierce with age. You use this as the title of your latest book, and it's also the name of your website. And I think of fierce, it's a powerful word, but I'm curious, why did you choose such an active word instead of something like serene with age?
Right. Well, First of all, I will say, as you're talking about my inability to pray, I was very mad at God for a while, because it was like one of those moments where you realize, I've worked so hard all my life, and what's the prize at the end here? You know, it's like loss and ultimately death, and it's like it doesn't make sense to me how God set it up. So this book is coming to terms and re-embracing my relationship with God in a more mature, spiritually mature way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not easy. As Jacob at the Jabbok River, who for those who have a biblical background will remember that he struggled all night. He wrestled all night with a water sprite or a demon or an angel. Nobody knows quite what it was, but whatever it was a representative of God. And to me, that was the type of passage that I was on, which was anything green. I think a lot of times when people talk about serene old age, really trying to say is we want you to be quiet and invisible and not complain, not say
right.
anything, don't make any trouble, you know, just scurry to the margins and disappear so we don't have to deal with you. So a problem with the whole notion of serenity. And I think our generation of boomer women are feisty, and I don't think that's going to stop. I think that, you know, sometimes serene, but sometimes we're going to be powerful, and sometimes we're going to be curious, and sometimes we, you know, upset with God, and sometimes we're going to be joyous. I think, you know, many of us prepared our whole lives. You know, we started in our 20s, virtual and psychological growth. And I think that we're at a point in our life where we understand that the human potential is about embracing everything. It's fully alive.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, fierce was the word in my mind that countered the notion of serenity and gave me the space to be my whole self as I aged.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like it. To me, it's a warrior word, and I think that we need to be warriors here as we enter into old age. So I once I read the book, I understood it. But since I'm expecting that most people who are going to be on the call here this evening haven't had the chance to read it, so I certainly wanted to start out with giving you a chance to talk about how you chose that word. So next, let's talk about. What would you say is the link between spirituality and consciousness?
I don't know. Were you ever in a conscious raising group back in the 60s?
I believe that I was. I would have been in high school then. I graduated from high school in 1970, So I certainly heard about consciousness raising. I certainly was all for, I can't say I actually burned my bra, but, you know, I was all for women's lib, and that part of that had to do with consciousness raising, as I recall.
Right. Well, I think most of us have some sort of history of either being in a consciousness raising group or being aware of what was going on. And basically what it was is women waking up to their power and their potential. And they were also waking up to the stereotypes that they had unconsciously accepted coming out of the 50s. You know, the idea that other people would call the shots for us and that we weren't equal. You know, the passivity and all the old, you know, the apron rules and all that stuff.
Oh, exactly. I watch Mad Men on TV, and people, a lot of my
exactly.
friends ask me, how can you watch that Mad Men show? And I say, well, first of all, because I worked in advertising, and secondly, because I just am so fascinated with the way the relationship between the sexes is portrayed in that show. So, yes, I understand what you're saying.
The show is really interesting. It just shows how far as a generation we can this country in terms of, you know, women in the workplaces, racism, homophobia. I mean, you know, it's like there's so many stereotypes and challenges that we've done some heavy lifting in our generation's time, and I don't think we're always given the credit for it. In fact, I think people bash us a lot on thinking, not realizing how much we've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question, I think we're at another revolution, and I think that this time the stereotype we're busting has to do with the steps of aging. And what I've noticed is how many boomers and boomer women in particular, I can't say that. It's really, it's boomers in general, and it's also the whole society. Ageism is the water we swim in. So as an example, if you say to somebody, can you believe I'm 60? You know, that's, you know, men say that, and it sounds like on the surface a wonderful thing to say, but if you really think about it, what you're saying is I'm the exception to the rule. Every other 60-year-old woman looks terrible.
Right.
I mean, I think it's much more important for us to raise our consciousness to how incredible 60 can, how rich it can be. Not always wonderful, trust me. I'm not one of those, I'm very good about embracing the shadow side of things, but there are as many good to say about 60, and there's as many bad things to say about 60 as there is about 30 or 20 or any other age. So, you know, I'm very much about taking a look at some of the humor and some of the role models and all the anti-aging moisturizers and things like that. And I'm trying to help people wake up to that moment of awareness that says, wait a minute, this has I've adopted societal attitudes that are actually making me feel bad about myself. I've been in denial, and denial, as I was in at the beginning of my book, it prevents you from doing the hard work of aging, and there is a lot of psychological and spiritual work to be done when you start approaching your late 50s and your 60s and beyond. If you want to be a great 80-year-old, you better be doing the hard lifting in your 50s and 60s and 70s and not be in denial trying to pretend you're, you know, 60 or 30. It's not. 60 is an important time to prepare for the next stage of your life.
All right. Well, that's good for us to realize. And I'll have to say, as I've already said, I am over 60. I'm 61. But despite the fact that I have knees that hurt me every morning when I wake up, I still haven't gotten to the point of telling myself that I feel old. So let's talk a little bit about how I believe that you say that you feel old, and I'd like you to talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I know people say it's so odd that you are now proud of being old. But for me, and struggle all the way during that year that I kept this journal, was discovery that eventually I came to understand that old for me equates to feeling free.
Okay.
I mean, during the course of that year, I got rid of things that younger people, and by younger I mean people who are in the heat of their careers or raising their families or who consider themselves to be in midlife or still strive, still have ambition, those kinds of things, that I started being rejected by a whole lot of people and things, and somehow got my power back through that to realize that others' rejection was my freedom, and that I was suddenly in a place in my life where other people's opinions didn't matter as much, and I was freer to call the shots and less concerned about what other people thought of me. Those are fairly common experiences of women as they age if they allow themselves to go through that initial pain of thinking of it as rejection.
Mm-hmm.
I think of invisibility, for instance, now as a superpower. I mean, I love to be in an elevator where nobody notices that I'm there, and they tell all their truths because I'm supposedly invisible, and then I take it back and put it in my book.
Right. Absolutely. I can identify with that. So I think that what you're saying is that we should stand proud and tall and say, I'm old, you know, and I'm old and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tall order. That's asking a lot of people, only because the stereotypes and imagery of what it means to be old haven't changed yet. So, you know, when you say I'm old, people will rush, my children, my adult children, my, you know, my friends will all say, oh, no, you're not old. You know, don't say that. But so there's a lot of work to be done, and I know that I'm a pioneer. But I'm not alone. I mean, there's many people that see aging as a spiritual path, and aging as a culmination, aging as a reward for the life. I mean, there's a lot of paradigm shifting right now. I don't think we're quite there yet. Where I tend to say, honestly, in groups, I tend to not say I'm old just because people conjure up, you know, granny in her rocking chair. So I tend to say I'm older. That's fair.
Well,
I'm definitely aging. And I'm growing into the notion that I'm.
Interesting. I'll tell you a little story about myself on that for a second, if I could, because I keep thinking about this lately, and I keep marveling about it. When I was in grad school, I did my master's thesis was on I was in the marketing area, and what I realized, as I'm sure you did, is that, you know, the demographics that we looked at, we pretty much stopped at 54, and then we lumped everybody over, you know, 70 plus or something, you know, anybody over. You know, we really were interested in the 18 to 36 group, maybe.
Exactly.
But mm-hmm. we had knowledge of there were these older groups. But once we got to the 54 limit, we kind of just lumped everybody else as old. Well, I took a few gerontology courses in grad school, so I started to realize that I was quite fascinated with what I was learning about aging in my gerontology classes, and I had to look at this in terms of my communications training. So I decided that I would do my master's thesis on interviewing 100 women that were 55 plus on what type of media they used and what they were looking for in media and those sorts of topics to try to get a picture of the older consumer. That was what my thesis was about.
Ah.
And I did this 100 interviews of women that were 55 plus, most of them over 60. And in my grad school group, in my little cohort, I would say, well, I have to go call some more old ladies now. I can't believe I said that, because I was talking to people back then that are the same age that I am now, and I just told you that I don't feel like I'm an old lady, so I don't think they did either.
That is funny. Well, maybe someday that'll be a compliment, but it hasn't changed. It's just, it blows my mind when the media portrays older women, usually in one of two extremes. Either it's like they get an 18-year-old mom with gray hair on her,
mm-hmm.
you know, which drives me crazy, or, you know, they show, I mean, you can't show like an older woman if you're trying to call them forever young, who isn't like climbing the Himalayas or, you know, running a marathon. I mean, it's exhausting to watch older women being put through these paces in order to look like, you know, we're going to still buy those products.
Right.
Or you've got the woman who fell down and can't get up, you know, that whole thing. And I'd say this, a lot of advertisers are completely missing the boat. They really don't know where the bulk of us are. The large number of boomer women are in still in the heat of lives, but with different interests and different passions, and you know, not trying to be forever young, but not ready for the rocking chair either. So you know, there's this huge vast territory that is virtually unexplored and unexploited.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating to be part of it, and I think it will be interesting to see if some of the stereotypes can be changed during our lifetime. I would certainly hope so. But let's get back to spirituality, because I'm quite interested with the things that you wrote about in the book regarding spirituality. In fact, it looks to me like you spent your entire life writing spiritual books, and yet you say that you weren't feeling that you were spiritually prepared for aging. I believe you wrote in the book that you forgot how to pray during this year, and I already mentioned that, so I think we've agreed that you said that you did that. But why do you think that you weren't better prepared spiritually for aging?
Yeah, well, you know, almost all of my books have had a spiritual core to them, like The Art of Resilience, and my PhD in religion. I've been trained as an interfaith spiritual counselor at the the new seminary in Manhattan. I have a really rich and deep spiritual background. I think that for me, one thing is my spirituality had peaked at a younger age because I had breast cancer when I was in my late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And really had to have some conversations with God about mortality and dying, and came to surrender and accept that. So I was really in a very close relationship with God at that point in my life. However, I was also at the same time praying for healing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that I did heal. It was went through the whole, you know, terrible experience of chemo and mastectomy and all that. But I did come out the other end and I healed. And I knew that I was healing when I stopped, when everything stopped being so precious and meaningful. And I started worrying again about things like, have I changed the conditioning filter and, you know, taxes, you know. It's like the mundane things that our lives started flooding back into me. And so that was what, 15 years ago or 19 years ago? I've lost track. I mean, it was a long, long time ago. And and you kind of forget. And I started living my life again. And when I had to deal with the notion of aging and the whole notion of mortality came back around to me. The difference was that I couldn't pray for healing. You don't heal from
right,
old age.
Don't heal from faith, right?
You don't heal from life. I mean, we all do really in the end. And so I'm very fortunate because I've always loved the story of Moses, and I just, I don't know, for some reason I've identified with Moses. I think I love the stuttering part.
Okay.
Up on the mountaintop, stuttering. But there was part of the story that I had never really looked at before, and during this year I was just fascinated by Moses being able to go into the Promised Land and, you know, being frozen out. Here he spent his whole life taking his people all the way there, and he didn't get to go to the Promised Land. And it was just interesting for me because I kept on revisiting that story and going, starting being very angry at God for not letting Moses into the Promised Land. And then every time I revisited the story, I saw a different aspect, and I went deeper and deeper with it until I came really grateful to God for keeping Moses for the Promised Land. I won't give away all the book, but for me, the message in that was that, you know, we think that we pray and get things to turn out the way we want. And I think most of us, our spirituality has that sort of element to it. I called it as denial earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Until we realize that there are certain things that are, we're going to be able to call the shots ultimately, any of us. And so if you're willing to confront that, it's a very dark passage, but when you come out the back end of, you're not afraid of anything anymore. I mean, you know, face mortality, face your own fears,
mm-hmm.
Surrender to the ultimate, and suddenly that is where that freedom comes from. That exuberant, joyous hope and optimism. It has very little to do anymore with the things that have us and the things that we once thought were so important to us.
All right. That's a good thing to find out, that we can come out on the other side with those realizations. I think that's...
If we're lucky and if we can hold on. I don't want to make it look rosy. I mean, there's like those moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's moments where it all makes sense and you're free and you can accept anything and everything. And then there's those other moments where you're like, oh, no, this isn't going to me. You know, it can happen to her. I don't want it to happen to me. So
right.
This is kind of the same kind of maybe passage that maybe serious meditators or Buddhists or Hindus, you know, people who really believe in transcending self, I think that understand the seriousness and the length of that type of practice. It's not something you snap your finger and suddenly you're in this place of deep surrender.
Mm-hmm.
But all I right. saw a glimpse of it. I have seen glimpses.
And that's very heartening, I think, to know that you were able to see those glimpses.
Absolutely. I mean, it means everything. Mm-hmm. If you have a glimpse, then you have hope. And I personally think hope is the most important emotion that there is, beyond being serene, beyond being happy. I think for me, the notion of some sort of ultimate hope, as well as interim hope, mm-hmm. I think we should all try and hold on to our hope as long as we can.
Excellent point. Well, mm-hmm. on that same topic, or maybe related to it, what would you say is the most important takeaway about getting old that you brought away from this year?
I started the year dreading aging. And then I went through a period of like accepting aging, you know, like accepting or coping with it. And it got to be, you know, natural. But where aging really got to be exciting for me is when I had to see aging as a spiritual path. When I realized that it was stripping away my old persona and freeing me in ways I wanted to be free in my life and didn't know how to get there. Mm-hmm. And aging for me, is a mystical path. And that is so counter how our culture approaches aging. It even feels funny coming out of my mouth. But that is just the truth of it, is to wake up every morning and saying that, you know, all of the loosening my grip on the status quo of things that I've always wanted to transcend was always within my grasp. I had to let time show me the way.
And considering all the study that you have done in your life on spirituality, how hard do you think it would be for the typical baby boomer woman who hasn't done all the study that you have done to come to that understanding?
Well, I think what really spurred me on is I didn't want to be the same kind of 80 or 90-year-old my mother was.
Mm-hmm.
She was really a victim of her circumstances. She was a bright woman, a brilliant woman, but she was of a generation. She, you know, that whole, you know, what are they? Was she the great generation? She was the Iron Maiden of the World War II, you know, that whole group, Rosie the Riveter.
Right.
Hard as nails and smart as a tack. But that generation wasn't big on spirituality or psychology, looking at those kinds of things. And so when she was in a position where she didn't have control over her circumstances, and for that it really got to a point for her when her husband died and she ended up in assisted living and then her health started to fail. She had no tools or resources to draw upon. Grit can only go so far, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched her and I thought to myself, you know, no reason why when I'm 80, I couldn't, or really more 90, I would say, I couldn't be, even if I was in a nursing home, listening to Enya, you know, with incense burning. Those mountaintop experiences don't have to be mountaintops. And,
mm-hmm.
and how can I bring that forward to me so that I've got something to hope for that I can have almost regardless of anything? I mean, I understand there's some shadow sides to aging that even maybe incense and beautiful might not reach. But at least in my mother's case, she had her full faculty of mind, was healthy enough that there was so much more she could have done had she had a spiritual practice of some kind. So I would say that if you're a baby boomer, and I think most of the people listening are, even if you haven't started, it's better to start now and late and be able to practice this for 20 or 30 years so that you won't be a victim of being 90-year-old. You'll have a new bag of tricks you can call on to provide you with a sense of meaning and purpose. It's not being given to you through external affirmation anymore.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's something important to think about. Now, given your newlywed perspective, what do you say to people who tell you that they feel sad over realizing that they've lost their youth? Do you tell them it's okay to mourn, or do you tell them, buck up, you know, it's nothing to be worried about or nothing to be sad about? How do you approach those people?
Well, I think it's fine to be sad about our losses. And there's so many wonderful things about being younger and healthier,
mm-hmm.
You know, more attractive by society standards in the peak of our careers. I mean, there's wonderful things about being young. Of course we should mourn our losses, but we shouldn't let the losses define who we are. The thing that I really do as the course of over the course of this year is this notion of embracing the wide range of the whole human condition, and to understand that sweet sadness and loss they don't mean you lose the boss. They don't make you losers. They make you deeper.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to have our crises. We need to have our grief and our losses. And again, people that deny these things. Oh well, I will just tell you this one thing. I don't know if you've been listening to the news lately, but baby boomers, especially baby boomer men, are the off the charts in terms of suicides.
Mm-hmm.
And also, an unrelated piece of news was that all the cults that are going after, they used to go after teenagers, not after baby boomers. So,
oh, I've heard that.
Yes,
it makes sense.
I think that was on 60 Minutes. And
okay.
So I'm sitting here, I'm putting two and two together, and it's like people who are, well, first of all, our generation was just underprepared for retirement, for financially, emotionally, everything else, and that's part of that denial. They were doing research studies like a couple years ago where they would survey boomers, are you going to be fine financially in old age? And, you know, like 80%, 90% of boomers would say, I'm fine. You know, they had like $1,000 in the bank.
Right.
You know? So now suddenly it's like, oh, whoops, I guess I should have been, you know, dealing with the truth about, you know, the baby boomers whose mothers hip or leg problems are buying three-story walk-ups on the beach because, you know, they want to live on the beach forever. And then all of a sudden, I have so many friends that are like, they can't go into their own house because they had this dream. They were in total denial about their future. And so they're living, you know, in a friend's house hoping that their legs can mend enough back into their own beds.
Wow.
How did I get onto this? What did you ask me? I'm sort of on a rant right now.
Well, we were talking about would you tell people that it's okay to mourn our lost youth? And I think
and I'm saying that I think it's like critical, actually, because unless we deal with the shadow sides of things, then we're in denial. I mean, the people who are young, those are the ones I feel sorry for, the ones that aren't mourning the loss of their youth, that are borrowing their clothes and, you know, having extreme medical procedures and things like that, and, you know, who are trying to pass themselves off as many years younger, they may not be doing the important psychological and spiritual work that an aging body and all of its losses bring front and central that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's important to realize that. Now, before we go too much further, I do think that we should talk to our listeners about that special offer that you have for them. So would you like to talk to them about that offer right now?
I would. Now, this is between you and me because we were offering this during pre-publication of my book. And my book came out on Mother's Day, and so now it's obviously post-publication. So most people are paying $69 for my online retreat, but I'm I was asked if I had a special offer. This popped into my mind. So I would love for those tuned into this phone call to be able to take my the Fierce with Age online retreat as my guest, and I think we'll tell you how to do that. What it is it's 10 days worth of exercises, lessons, and a sense that you can do at your own pace. You download it, and it walks. After I went through this year of transformation, I've always been a teacher. So I've always taught like resilience and intuitive decision making and things like that. And I thought to myself, is there some way that I can take the learnings of going from dreading age to this fierce with age and walk somebody else through it? And that this online retreat is the result, and I guess about people have gone through now, and if you come to my website, you can read about it and see people's experience doing it. It's extremely interactive, and it asks questions and challenges you to think of aging in ways that I haven't seen elsewhere. So I'm very excited about it, and I would love for you to be able to do this as my guest. By the way, I'm sorry. It's you're my guest if you purchase the book. Oh my gosh! Mm-hmm. So that was the promotion. If people pre-ordered the book, they got this as a gift.
Right.
So yes, yes. If you purchase the book, then we'll give you instructions about how to retreat online retreat as my guest.
Mm-hmm. And normally this retreat has a $69 value. So it's a, as you said, during pre-publication, it was a different offer, but now that the book is published, it's $69 for this program. But because of listening to the call today, if people buy the book, then how do they get in touch with you to tell you that they want to take advantage of the special that's related to being on this call?
Well, purchase the book however you'd want. It's in Kindle. It's a trade paperback, so you can get it at bookstores or online. Amazon.com is, you know, obviously a logical place.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, as an aside, it hit number one in the aging category on Kindle, so I'm really, really happy about that.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Oh, I feel so good. I'm so gratified because, you know, it was an uphill battle going through the year, let alone getting the book. Trying to sell people on how great it is to get old to publishers. So, I feel like I've got some fiery gates here. Anyway, okay, so to make it very simple, the book however you purchase it, and then email me with either the date that you purchased the book, receipt number, anything, and I will email you back the retreat as an attachment. And you can email me at carol@fiercewithage.com.
All right.
Fierce, in case you, it's F-I-E-R-C-E.
Mm-hmm.
So it's carol@fiercewith.com.
All right.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. And if you go onto the website, you can read all about the retreat. And again, you'll see that for everybody else it's $69. But I would love to have more people take advantage of the retreat. So I hope you'll do it.
I hope so, too. I'm certainly looking forward to participating, and I hope that people.
And you've already read the book, so I'll just send
yes.
you the attachment.
Right. All right. I've opened the lines here so that anybody who's listening on the call can ask a question. So since our time is flying by here, we've taken the at least half hour that I promised that you and I would be speaking, and. So in the time that's left here, I want to make sure that anyone who's listening who has a question would speak up and ask you their questions. So that's what I'm telling all of you guests who are listening here. All you need to do, the lines have been unmuted, so all you need to do is speak, and we will hear you, and Carol will try to answer your questions. So who would like to be first? Well, I see that there are people on the call, so please don't be shy. All right.
They can answer questions too, right?
Yes. I've got.
Maybe we should ask them a question.
Yes, we could go to that, but first, before we do that, I'll ask one maybe to get things started here. In the book, you talk about that you hadn't been able to pray, and then toward the end of the year, a number of prayers flowed out of you, and I'd like you to perhaps take a few minutes here and tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's interesting. I just took a prayer journaling workshop last weekend, so it just totally refreshed it to me. For me, praying is where I converse with God. I not only ask God to do things for me, but for me the real joy of praying is being receptive to hearing God's voice, and so it's more of a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, it's like God is always trying to get through to me. I'm so darn noisy and don't leave God my face. It was kind of disconcerting because during the year I knew enough to like try and sit quietly and see if I could hear God speaking to me. It just wasn't working. I guess in the old ways, it wasn't working that I could hear that still small voice inspiring mm-hmm. me or giving me support. But I realize now in retrospect that God really was with me during that year because books kept falling into my hands. There were some amazing books, and I have a little bibliography in the back of Fierce with Age. And really the whole book, if you recall, it's, you know, every time I was like really stumped, a book would fall off a shelf or I would find an old book I hadn't seen in a long time or, you know, I'd bump into something, give me a book. So contemplative reading is also prayer. But then I would say the biggest teacher, the biggest conduit of the divine to me that year was my little dog, Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, she just walked up this very second. He is sitting next to me. That is so weird.
Wow.
She's an 8-pound Maltese Yorkie. They call them Morkies.
Mm-hmm.
And we went squirrel hunting. We had nothing else to do. I was underemployed, and Dan was running off to his big job, and I was left in this young community with no friends. But we had a beautiful park near us, and so Lucky and I went squirrel hunting every day. And I realized that the patience that she was bringing and the attentiveness and the passion for life and the commitment, those were all gifts to me. And one of the things that I learned, I channeled a bunch of spiritual truths, and they did flow through me. There's a climactic scene that I won't give away the details, but there's a climactic scene in the book where it's kind of similar to Moses. I channeled a whole bunch of information, and I call them the 11 spiritual truths of aging. And I will tell you what my favorite one is, because it's spiritual truth number 11, and that is really for your life to be worthwhile or to have purpose or meaning, all you do is just make one dog happy.
Mm-hmm.
As a dog, you know, it's like
when I
and I do.
That,
I
just love that.
Thank you. I do spend a lot of time remembering that. You know, it's like it might not have to be judged by external standards at this point. You know, the book doesn't have to be on the bestseller list. I have to know what I'm doing today or tomorrow. If I've taken my dog for a walk and she's wagging her tail at me, then I feel like life is meaningful. So. That's one permanent lesson I learned during that year that's in the book and it's still in my life.
Good. I love the pictures that I've seen of you on your website, on your Fierce with Age website of you holding Lucky. I think that's a wonderful, especially if you've read the book, and for anyone who's read the book, knows how important Lucky was to you during that year. So I think that it's important that you've got those pictures with the two of you. So who else has a question? Okay, don't be shy. All right. maybe if we talked a little bit, Carol, about the a little bit more about the self-paced spiritual retreat. Is that something that how long does it take a person to go through it? Can you take, it's self-paced, so obviously you can take it at your convenience, but is there an optimal amount of time that you think that would be advisable for it? I guess I'm getting at how long will people need to reserve in their life to participate and get the most out of this?
They're 15 lessons. Some of them are going to take 15. Some of them might take like a half hour or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was intended to be a lesson every weekday for 3 weeks. But some people have done it like taking a long weekend retreat,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a great way to do it. And some people do one a week or whatever. What you end up with is a life plan. We probably all heard the 12-step saying, what is it, control the things you can, you know, handle the things you can, accept the things you can't, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And never is that more helpful than in planning for the rest of our lives, because, I mean, how many of us have had the experience of going to a financial planner? And the financial planner says, okay, so when are you going to die? You know, this ain't about that. And who's going to go first, you or your husband? And
mm-hmm.
How long before your children are financially independent? And you know, how much money is your mom going to use, you know, before she dies? I mean, it's one question after another that are just completely out of our control. And, you know, it's like we write these fixtures for ourselves based on statistics that have nothing to do with our real situation, and we're supposed to do all of our planning around that.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that was a lot of trying to come up with a life plan, a blueprint for myself in all the areas of my life in which there's so many uncertainties was what was really stopping me from getting started on planning.
Mm-hmm.
And so this workshop is a way to help you break denial about the things that you wish you have control over and still about how can you make a plan that takes into consideration those things if we don't have control. So one of the things about my book, and I'll just give away a little line here, is that at the point at which I was feeling most out of control of my life, I discovered budgeting. I was one of those people that had never really budgeted. And I found out that budgeting for me was one of those keys to freedom. I mean, just telling the truth about where I'm at and how much I have and don't have and how I have to live my life to accommodate that, it turned out a very spiritual, and I would say spiritually liberating experience. And I think a lot of things that we avoid doing, that was my example. Other people, I'm sure, who are listening are great budgeters, but perhaps they haven't been to the doctor to get their blood checked. Or,
right.
You know, we all have blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
And so the planning process is in great part working with you to help you identify what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, and what are your blind spots. How can you make a plan that takes all of that into consideration? And what I've discovered is that almost every single issue, if you dig deep enough, becomes a spiritual issue about meaning. That's what I'm saying, spiritual. I'm not, you know, I'm really talking about having the sense that life is meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some kind of order to the universe that makes sense. And that's, I think, a lot of what we're all striving for.
I was just going to say, I think that's fundamental to everyone, isn't it? The search for meaning in life.
More so as we age, I think younger people, it's a luxury of aging, not that way, because I think, I don't know if you remember Abraham Maslow's adult development pyramid. People mm-hmm. at the bottom, which is most people, if you're dealing with survival issues,
right?
You know, you're just worrying about getting food on the table and roof over your head. And, you know, a huge percentage of the world's population is in that place. That, you know, being able to think about meaning and spirituality and all that stuff is really, well, maybe not spirituality, because you can be poor and at the bottom of the pyramid and be dealing with spirituality. But I think that, you know, trying to being able to have choices about meaning is masked that at about 2% of the population who had enough life experience and wisdom to be asking those deeper questions. And the interesting thing right now is I think that because of the longevity bonus, the fact that so many of us are living so much longer and healthier, that we have that many more years to develop ourselves. And I think that that number that he put it at 2% of people who actually actualized and dealing with meaning and purpose is going to be a much larger number, already is a much larger number.
That makes sense. Certainly, I mean, think back to when, not that many years ago, when Social Security was put into place and it went into effect when you turned 65. I think that not that many people lived past age 65 at that time. So now, well, when we know that there are so many people on the Today Show, when Willard says, you know, happy birthday to the people that are 100, that list is just quite a number of people every time he makes the list. So obviously many, many people are living into their hundreds and hopefully have been able to find that time beyond work time that and use it as in a way to be totally, as well, not totally, but as self-actualized as they might possibly be able to become.
That's the thing. It's like it used to be when you passed midlife, you were thought to be in like this sort of like vast wasteland of old, you know, just old. And now people have realized that there are, and I would say social scientists, of which I'm one, we're beginning to understand that there are multiple life stages after midlife, which is a brand new notion. So, you know, there's the young old, which I am, and you're not there yet. I would still say you're in midlife from our conversation. That's my gift to you. I think of you as young.
61 is not old yet. I'll be sure and tell my son that.
But there's this other stage between midlife and dependent old age, which is this sort of bonus stage where, you know, I think Barbara Walters just went into it at age 87 when, you know, she just went to retirement. And what she didn't say that she's, you know, going to go play golf 100% of the time or go sit on the rocker or rest on her laurels. She said was she wanted to see what there is to do in life besides TV.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I think that's what this stage of life is, this of being healthy enough and having enough energy that we can, many of us have this incredibly rare gift of being able to explore what it means to be free to make our own choices, much, much freer than and women ever and older generations of older people have ever had, because, you know, we get to live longer and with our health intact and see what that's like. And I just personally think it's a tragedy now. At the beginning of Fierce with Age, you know, my book, I thought it was a tragedy that I couldn't extend my life longer. You know, I still wanted to be doing the same old things in the same old ways. And I didn't get to make a choice about that. I got kicked out of situations that forced me into dealing with the fact that I was feeling rejected and older. But now I realize it was the greatest gift of all, because it didn't take long. It took me a year, but at the end of that year, I was in this whole new life stage, which was about being able to have all that same vitality and excitement about life, but in a new life stage in which I was free of the past and free of regret and free of other people's opinions. And I wouldn't give this back for all the money in the world.
Well, that's just a wonderful testament, and I'm thankful that you can tell us all that's just the best thing I think you could give as a gift to people that are worried about facing the fact that they can no longer call themselves young or middle-aged, you know, that they are getting into this, what we used to call the twilight stage of life. So excellent way to end a note to end it on here this evening. And Carol, it's been great talking to you. I really want to thank you for being my guest and for this great discussion on what I kind of sometimes think of as the elephant in the room, the fact that baby boomers can no longer claim to be forever young. And so with that, I'd like to remind everyone who's listening that Carol Osborne's website is located at fiercewithage.com, and it's a treasure trove of content. I encourage everyone who's listening to this call to go check out the site. I advise you to go there right now, in fact, and be sure and sign up for her free digest, which delivers content right into your email inbox. And also, of course, be sure to take advantage of the special offer Carol made to everyone on the call tonight, which is that you would have the chance to participate in the workshops without paying the $69, though, because you've bought the book and you send her an email at carol@fiercewithage.com telling her that you've done this and so you qualify for the special. Finally, to review, your latest book, Carol, is called Fierce with Age, Chasing God and Squirrels in Brooklyn. And now that you've talked a little bit about you and Lucky, I think everybody can understand where the title came from.
Yes.
And if the book is not at your favorite bookstore, you can find it either on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, which is BN.com. You can read it in paperback form or on your Kindle or via Nook Book. And once you buy it, be sure to take advantage of Carol's special offer, which is buy the, as I just said, but I want to make sure that everybody gets it because it's such a wonderful offer. Buy the book and get access to her online retreat, which is a $69 value, but you'll be able to attend free. So in order to get this special offer, all you need to do, once again, is email Carol with your purchase receipt number and send her proof at her email address, which is carol@fiercewithage.com, and she'll send you the link back to you to get access via your email. One last chance for anyone who's listening here to ask a question before that I close the call here for this evening. Don't want anybody to go away without having their questions answered if they have been shy and didn't want to talk before this. Well, Carol, anything that you'd like to say before we close the call?
I'm not afraid of silence. I've learned to love silence. But I do want to let anybody who's listening know that I understand that these are extremely vulnerable issues and questions, and it's hard sometimes to share them, even in an anonymous venue. But if you'd like to, if you do have questions, feel free to email me at that same email address, and I will do my best to answer your questions. And hope to have a relationship with you at fiercewithage.com, and I'm just grateful to Anne, and I'm a member of National Association of Baby Boomer Women and a proud member, and so glad that, you know, we're finding each other.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Anne.
Well, thank you, Carol. This has been a wonderful call. I'm sorry that our listeners were shy, but I guess you say that you're aware that sometimes people don't want to talk about these questions, so certainly I appreciate you telling them that they can email you if they have any questions that they'd like to ask privately.
Absolutely.
So I'm just going to say good night, and thanks everyone for joining us. Thank you, Carol, for being my guest, and I'm going to say goodbye for now. Bye.
Okay, thanks, Anne. Goodbye, buddy.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.